Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Son of Slovenia, cool as hell. He scores the ball and he rebounds well. Don't fight the future, here comes Luka. Even losses feel like wins when you're with your good friend Tim. It's 77 Minutes in Heaven.
Welcome to 77 Minutes, a Dallas Mavericks podcast, part of the Athletic Podcast Network. One of every Mavericks podcast that says, hell of a season. Hell of a season, gents. I'm Tim Cato. I write and talk about the Mavericks. We've got Austin Gurria, and we're going to talk about the season that was. It's Friday. The Mavericks season ended yesterday in Game 5 to the Golden State Warriors. And I think there's only positives to be taken about the season that they played, the year that they had, the past 12 months, which had some bleak and dark moments, had some change, had a lot that happened. Not all of it good, but I think you look at the sum, the whole of the past 12 months, the whole of the year that was, and you can only undeniably say that the Mavericks are on a better trajectory, that things went in the right direction and are headed in the right direction in a way that we really could not say this time 1 year ago. Austin, as the resident fan voice of the 77 Minutes pod, just how are you feeling? How are you feeling after watching Game 5, a game that, you know, we're not even really going to talk about, not in any substantial way. What is there to talk about? You know, the Warriors are better.
Yeah, not much to talk about. Clay good.
Clay is good. That was the one thing that they had survived all series without him, you know, going off, and then he did, and you know, the Warriors were better. But I thought that even losing in five games, even the gentleman sweep that series was, that the Mavericks did not embarrass themselves, that they can be at least satisfied or you know, proud that they put up a fight, and they could have put up more of one had a few other things gone differently.
Yeah.
And now things are over. But it's about the season that was, and that was an undeniably good season.
I think you could boil down the season, what it felt like, to that last 15-0 run they had in the third quarter, where you're like, this game, they have nothing going for them. It looks like they're about to lose by 40 points and just get blown out in Golden State. And then all of a sudden, they just pulled it together. And Luka all of a sudden looked like he had a little bit of energy, and they made a run. And that was kind of how the season went. The season started off horribly. They looked terrible the first 20 games of the season, and it was not a lot of fun. They were, I think I described their wins early in the season as bad sex. That's, they just, no one was having a great time. And then the Christmas outbreak happened. And things turned around, and this was ended up being one of the most enjoyable Mavs seasons I think that I've ever watched. That was truly fun. I think everyone had a good time. Everyone from Cuban down to Luka, down to the equipment guy, down to the fan, down to the scout. I think everyone had a good time, and that's honestly a very rare thing for an NBA franchise.
I like the term Christmas outbreak because I'm just thinking of like viral transmission of Christmas, of holiday cheer. Everybody's just all of a sudden getting it. Charlie Brown spread it. Absolutely. An undeniable part of the season. You cannot tell the story of the season without telling the story of Charlie Brown Jr. You think he's going to get his name on the court if they do that again?
Absolutely. I hope they put a little Christmas tree by it. I'll never forget the Charlie Brown Christmas scream.
This was a season where Isaiah Thomas played for the Dallas Mavericks.
He did. That happened.
Brandon Knight played several games twice for the Mavericks.
And was great.
Yeah, he was solid. Dude, he's also such a nice dude. I'll tell a little story. The bleakness, the darkest point of the season was the month of December, undeniably. I was on the road for the trip that started on Christmas Day. And because of the outbreak that was happening around the team, they were running with an absolute skeleton crew. They limited the traveling party to as few people as possible. It ended up being that I was the only beat reporter who went on that trip. I was the only reporter for the pregame press conference of the game against the Utah Jazz. It was just me, Jason Kidd, and Scott Tomlin in a room together. The visiting, the Utah Jazz beat writers had a similar breakout and were not allowed in tier one level. So usually that would be, usually that room would at least be populated by a few people who naturally covered the team. It was just me, just Scott Tomlin, the PR director, and just Jason Kidd. It was us three in this little side room. If you listen to my podcast after the Utah Jazz game, I was talking about it like an owner's room or an owner's suite. It was that same room because they didn't need a bigger one. They didn't need some typical press conference room because it was tiny. And so, there's questions asked over Zoom. But I remember just how unnatural it felt. And it did. It felt weird. It felt odd. It felt off. There was a sense of like unease and dread that was going around the team at that time. People were telling me on the team, any minute now, we might test for COVID. And that was all amplified by the way the team was playing on the court. And it wasn't fun, and the results were not good. And nobody could see a path forward, a positive path. There was an idea that the team would have some positive regression, that they would improve here and there, that we could see small signs of improvement. But with the team and the record they had at that point, there was a real chance that they would not be able to dig themselves out of it in a manner that would allow for a successful season, in a manner that would allow for a first-round win, which we entered the season saying was the number one goal. And now we're here. They not just won the first round, they won the second round. They went to the conference finals. They were one of the four teams remaining, left standing. That's so both impressive, which we've said and will say, but it's just remarkable from where this team was, how things felt for them to now be here.
Yeah, they blew out a 64-win team in Game 7 of the playoffs on the road. This was just a very, very impressive season. I honestly, this is like almost as impressive to me as the 2011 run in that it takes so long. It takes so much to really make a run like that after you start a season that far in the hole, and getting everybody to rally and create a new identity, and you trade your second best player at the trade deadline, and then you still make a huge run. It's very, very impressive. I guess I had to eat a lot of crow on the Jason Kidd hire, and I think a lot of people did. And it's what he did was very, very impressive. There's not really another word for it.
Yeah, let's talk about that. Crow is interesting. What does it mean to eat crow? I think there were very justified criticisms of what we knew about Jason Kidd when he was hired. I also think that people forget that more criticism, at least stemming from me, was about a lack of trust at the time of the organization to make that hire. If this was an organization that, in the past month of that hire, had everything, all their doors latched and their, had all their affairs in order, I think this would have gone very differently. There could have been a lot more trust in, the team, believing that the team knew what they were doing, even given Jason Kidd's track record. But quite famously, they did not. So I do think that the skepticism,
it was warranted.
It was warranted and it was justified. I remember trying, and maybe it didn't always come across from my perspective, but I remember trying to approach the Jason Kidd as a head coach with a very open mind. And I remember a lot of criticism being levied at him as the season progressed. And while I would acknowledge aspects of what he was doing that I wasn't a fan of. I always thought that he was, you know, in those seasons' first 2 months, he wasn't the issue.
No.
He wasn't. He was far from the issue. And all that said, I did not expect to be lauding his coaching ability as this year went on. Like, I'm not trying to do revisionist history here where I was a person who nailed it or thought that this would happen. I've been just as shocked and just as surprised and just as incorrect about the success that he would have as a head coach. But it's been very interesting just how different it was. Like, he simplified things. Him and his coaching staff simplified things, and they brought in a culture that clearly this team needed. You know, it one that in many ways ended up in the same place that Rick Carlisle's did, in the sense that this team had very defined roles. Everybody knew exactly what they should and should not be doing, but they knew. They were not being told what they could and could not do, which, to be fair to Rick Carlisle, he was pretty good at identifying what players should and should not be doing. But when you just, you know, this is applicable to life. It's much easier to believe to do something because you believe in it than being told to do.
It's like you tell your kid, don't eat ice cream for breakfast. Don't do it. And they're like, well, I'm not doing it, but I'm not doing it out of spite. And then you let them eat ice cream for breakfast. Maybe let them bring the ball up. Maybe let them post up for a little bit. And then they keep doing it, and they're like, this isn't very fun. Actually, my teeth are cold. And I don't like doing this. And now I'm not going to eat ice cream. You don't even have to tell me to not eat ice cream. I don't even want to do that anymore.
I mean, this is official advice from the 77 Minutes and Podcast. You know, let your 11-year-old smoke a cigarette.
Just do it.
Yeah.
They'll find out. They don't like it.
They won't ever do it again. So I think that, you know, it's almost the defining, like, theme of the season is Jason Kidd's coaching. Just because, maybe because it's been so long since there's been a different approach, because Carlisle was in place for as many years as he was, that it's almost like, you know, even me as a writer, even me as an analyst and beat writer of this team, I felt like I was flexing new muscles, that I had become very conditioned to understanding Rick Carlisle's thought processes and the way that he acted and why he acted upon them, what I liked and disliked about his approach, but also understanding, okay, well, this is the approach and the least I can do is understand it. You know, that's, you know, nothing else is going to change about that. And then all of a sudden it was like, oh, okay, this guy's doing something different in this situation. Why is he doing that? And then realizing that I think so many of his decisions, even the ones that I disagree with, or at least, you know, in a vacuum, think were not the most effective ones, I still go back to believing that they were part of the broader, you know, broader purpose and broader ethos of what Kidd was trying to dictate. And I think that's been a really interesting thing to try to understand over these past months. And it's not to say that there won't be at some point something that he does that's within his coaching philosophy that objectively does not work and hurts the team. But that happens for every coach. You know, we are criticizing Steve Kerr about game 4. Yeah. You know, sitting here in front of this same microphone just, what, 2 days ago? 48 hours? And so I think that's been fascinating. And I think above all, like, there's a confidence in him and his coaching staff that wasn't warranted and certainly wasn't there when this year started. And I think that's a really good place for any team to be in, to have a level of confidence that if Rick Carlisle was still the head coach, if he had survived the year somehow, no matter what the results were, I don't know if that same confidence would have been there, or I know it wouldn't have been.
Especially from the players.
Yeah. And you know, that's where this all stems from, right?
I have enjoyed all season long listening to players talk about Kidd and knowing, finding out how much disdain there was for the previous regime. I didn't realize how much resentment there was on the roster for Carlisle. It was, guys would just go out of their way just to talk about how different this year was compared to last. You didn't even have to ask. Like, they would just impromptu tell you just in any interview about how much they like this season better and this version of coaching better. And, you know, it showed on the court. I think my biggest skepticism about Kidd wasn't even like the basketball the X's and O's before the season started. You know, it was the way that he treated people in his previous stops and the behavior that he had and some of the things, that the decisions he made and some of the power moves that he made. And I was like, this is not going to be a good working environment if he's going to still do those kinds of things.
I remember snippy comments being told to me of, like, the Mavericks went from Rick Carlisle to a worse strategy Rick Carlisle, another Rick Carlisle worse at X's and O's.
Yeah.
And that couldn't be further from the truth, as we learned.
As we learned. Right. I would honestly love to
know. But it was his reputation at the time, to a degree.
I would love to know what he went through to change as a person, because that's the one thing that I've been super surprised by. He's really taken a very psychologically healthy approach to the season, a very nurturing approach, and a very big picture approach. And you can tell all the guys really, really appreciate it and really buy into it. And even the leadership council and playing every single player in the first home game of the season, there's a lot of little cutesy, small things, but they go a long way in the season and they go a long way when things go badly. And I think that's a big reason why they were able to turn it around.
We'll have to dive into this even more. I have a lot that I'd love to talk about and discuss, maybe, with a guest or a former player who could amplify that conversation.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service that you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
You know, if I would have applied myself, I could have gone to the NBA.
You think so?
Yeah, I think so. But it's just like, it's been done. You know, I didn't want to, I was like, I don't want to be a follower. Hi, I'm Jason Concepcion.
And I'm Shea Serrano. And we are back. We have a new podcast from Wondery. It's called Six Trophies.
Woo!
And it's the best.
Each week, Shea Serrano and I are combing through all the NBA storylines, finding the best, most interesting, most compelling stories, and then handing out six pop culture themed trophies for six basketball related activities.
Trophies like the Dominic Toretto, I Live My Life a Quarter Mile at a Time trophy, which is given to someone who made a short-term decision with no regard for future consequence.
Or the Christopher Nolan Tenet trophy, which is given to someone who did something that we didn't understand.
Catalina Wine Mixer trophy.
Ooh, the Lauryn Hill, you might win some, but you just lost one trophy. And what's more, the NBA playoffs are here, so you want to make Six Trophies your go-to companion podcast through all the craziness. Follow Six Trophies on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. Listen ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus.
What did you learn about Luka Doncic this year?
I learned that he thinks very highly of himself and he thinks he still has a long way to go. I think I learned that he kind of learned some of his limits as a player, and I think that's the first time he's ever really felt those, I think especially on the defensive side, and he's learned what is required of him to win a championship. He finally got close enough to realize, okay, this is what I need to do. This is where I need to be if I want to win a championship. I'm a great player. He's phenomenal. He can do everything on a basketball court, but I don't think he really knew how far he was. And not to say that he's far away, but that he didn't know what the limits was and where the boundaries were and where he needed to go to really get to that championship level. And I think this season taught him that and taught him where he needs to be. And I think he's developed some as a leader and as like a true face of the franchise. I think he kind of skirted those responsibilities in his first couple of seasons, but I think he now really views himself as a leader of the team.
I think the first 2 months of the season, the first couple months, was the longest extended stretch that Luka has ever had on a basketball court where he was not having fun. You could look after every loss, every defeat, after, he struggled to, get 30 points on 30 shots, that it was really wearing on him. That he was really frustrated with everything around him, but I think to an extent himself. He understands that he came into the season in a way that really made it difficult for him to play like he wants to, like he knows how to, like he knows he's capable of playing. And I think it's, I think it would be we'd be assuming too much to think that this journey of realizing what it takes and commitment to a lifestyle is linear, that it only goes upwards. It's still really difficult for a 23-year-old to make the sacrifices and the commitment that we've seen Dirk Nowitzki make, that we've seen many other stars around the league make. It may take time. I would be surprised if he comes into next season out of shape to the level that he was to start this past season, to start the season 2 years ago. I don't know if he's going to come into the season in this, you know, talked about 99th percentile conditioning. He may never, you know, maybe that's just not his body type. Maybe that's not the way he's wired. But if that it's gonna, if that's going to come at some point in his career, it still may take a while. It still may take a few years before that is the level of commitment that he has. But I agree that he learned a lot about sacrifice and commitment and his own competitiveness, which I think fuels this. Like, I'm not asking him to make that commitment as a, you know, just as a third party observer. I would never ask anybody to make that commitment. I wouldn't make that commitment. that seems very difficult. I wouldn't want to do that. But I do think that the reason players reach this level is because they have a level of competitiveness that is really hard to understand, that for an average person, you know, we would never be at this point, even if we were 6'8 and naturally gifted. You know, the reason that players become stars of this echelon of magnitude is because they have a internal drive that is also in the 1% of, or the 99th percentile of humans. And I think that we're going to see him changing in that way and committing further as, you know, going into next season and even beyond that in a way that we haven't seen before. And I think it is because, like you said, this season, he really became and grew to understand how important that is and how necessary it is for him to be the player he believes he can be.
Yeah, and honestly, he's not that far away.
And, no, he's not.
And,
yeah.
And also, he's done it. Like, when he came into the bubble, he was in phenomenal shape. And I think he'll be similar to what he was in the bubble. Also, he gets to play in Eurobasket this summer in September. So he's going to be in shape coming in this season. I think he played for a very long time without a break and just took too long of a break last year and didn't realize how long it was going to take for him to get back into peak competitive shape. So actually, I really don't worry about him getting into that level of fitness for a season. I think it's about the small, like, details of that conditioning. And okay, this is what it's like to play a season into May. When you get to May, you get to late May, you need to know how to condition yourself, how to pace yourself throughout an NBA season to get yourself into May, June. Because that's something he hasn't done before. He played almost 100 games this year. And he's never played that many basketball games in one competitive season. And that's something you have to learn. That's something every player has to learn when you play that long. I mean, I think a lot of the guys that are like, this is the longest I've ever played. I mean, Dorian, Reggie, Brent, all those guys.
It's again worth reminding that, you know, it's almost like three seasons rolled into one with the COVID break and then just how shortened everything's been since. And even though Luka's season stretched longer this year, he still stopped playing basketball this year, even though they made the conference finals sooner than he did last season.
Yeah.
With the first round, which is kind of wild.
That is crazy.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's where we are. And that's where the season is. Do you have any other parting thoughts on what the season is? We'll be back next week with more of a proper postmortem eulogy of the season, but more specifically, a very future focused podcast. We'll have everybody on. Right now, I'd really just wanted to sum up, you know, what we saw over the past 9 months and how good almost all of it was. So is there any other aspect of the season that would have to be mentioned as you tell the story?
I think a lot of people compared Luka's run to LeBron's run in 07 when he played against the Spurs. And I think that Spurs series that LeBron played in was very similar to this Warriors series where Luka found out, oh, this is what playing against an actual championship level team that has been there before. This is what that's like. And I think that was a great lesson for him to learn. I'm glad they lost specifically to this Warriors team. I think that's just a lesson and experience that you really couldn't get from playing any other team. And I think it'll be really valuable for the team moving forward. And shout out Theo Pinson. Just made the season fun. Just had a good time. Just an immaculate vibe creator.
When are the Mavericks going to acquire their Zydrunas Ilgauskas?
I mean, I think they traded theirs away.
All right. That's the worst joke you've ever made on this podcast. My God. Out of, just completely out of pocket. Oh,
man, KP didn't deserve that one.
Is there no reverence anymore?
Oh, man. Shouts to KP. Hope he's enjoying Washington.
Good Lord. My God, man. Well, on that note, I apologize for Austin. That's the last episode he's ever going to be on. Just completely out of pocket. My man, he still has a career. Just taking shots.
Technically.
Well, yeah. What is a career if you're stuck playing for the Wizards?
Man. Not much of one. It's not magical.
It's more like a magic trick. You just kind of disappear.
Oof.
Yep. All right, let's get out of here. This is devolving. We will be back next week. I'm looking forward to that episode. I'm looking forward to talking about the future of this team, about the questions that we have headed into the offseason. But right now, just one last reminder. Enjoy what you just saw over the past 12 months. I think it is, you know, what's the point of sports if you can't enjoy something to the fullest of what it is and what it has been? The Mavericks losing in the conference finals, I don't care. You know, this season, by the standards of what it should have been, accomplished all of that and more. And that, to me, is where the joy of sports should come from. It's not about rings culture. It's not about, you know, what second star the team is going to get. It's about watching the games and saying, that was fun. I enjoyed that. I enjoyed this group of players. And I think that by every account and more, this season accomplished that for the fans, for the players, for the people on the team, for really everybody in Dallas, around Dallas basketball. You just have to view it as a undeniable success. Thanks for listening. We'll see ya.
He plays Fortnite just like me. I am 34. Don't fight the future, honey. Don't fight the future. The future is Luka, Big Dick Doncic from the home of Melania Trump. How many kids you have? Don't fight the future, it tears me apart. Don't fight the future, please be nice to Luka. Future four-time MVP.
Oh my God! Oh! Shut it down! Let's go home! It's a wrap, dude.
Man, that is a wrap.